an alcoholic. One of the things that I would like to do is, I know there's a question and answer period, but I would also like to hear other people's views on how they saw that they became powerless over alcohol. So at some point tonight, I would like that. So if you have, you know, if you have the urge that you want to talk about the first step and how it became so important to you later, just raise your hand and let's do it. I guess besides questions. The first step for me came the night that I called Alcoholics Anonymous. Up to that point in my life, I drank for 6 years. And it became more progressive, of course, as the years went by. You know, I started out with a little glass of wine in the afternoon, and by the time I called Alcoholics Anonymous, I was drinking almost a half a gallon of wine a day. I had to buy the half gallons in order to be able to exist. And so the powerlessness over alcohol came on March 24th, 1975. I came home from work. I had three daughters at that time. They were 5, 7, and 9. And they'd had a horrible life for 6 years. And I knew by this time in my life, I was a terrible mother. I was a terrible woman. I hated who I was, who I had become. I didn't know how to change that. I thought I was going to end up in a mental institution. I was really afraid. I didn't know how to change who I was. And I blamed everybody else for what was the matter with me. It was my mother, first of all, my mother, who I hated for my 35 years, and for my ex-husband, who never understood me, and of course my daughters, who didn't do what I wanted them to do when I wanted them to do it. And so I always say when I lead that we were like four wild screaming cats at the end of my drinking. Their frustration was horrible. And I always say right at this point that I am very grateful today that I have three wonderful, beautiful daughters that respect me and love me and have never, never made me feel the shame and the guilt that I felt inside myself. So I came home from work on March 24th. I had a jug of wine, and we all started fighting over whatever it was we fought over. Maybe they didn't start dinner. Maybe they were fighting with each other, because there was a lot of that went on at that point. Fighting all the time in the house, screaming and crying, and why are you going out again? And are you going to drink a lot tonight? And so I finally said, for whatever the argument was about, I'm done. I can't take this anymore. I'm leaving, and I don't even know if I'm coming back. And I truly meant that at that point. I hadn't started drinking yet, but the frustration was so awful that I just didn't know what to do anymore. And they knew it. And that morning of March 24th, I went to look in the mirror, and I couldn't look in my eyes. I was so ashamed. I could not look in my eyes. I had to fix my face, and I had to, you know, fix my hair, and I had to look halfway decent to go into work. Fortunately for me, at that point in time, I had not lost my job yet, and I should have. The reason I didn't lose my job was because I had a brand new boss, and by the time he got around to me, I was sober about 3 months. So there was something inside of me that knew that something was going to happen, that I'm impending doom that they talk about in the big book. And I could feel it. And I was afraid. I was totally afraid. So I left the house with that jug and left them screaming and crying and went to my friend Mary Ann's and stayed there for a couple hours, babbling and drinking and babbling and drinking. And I finally came home. I hadn't drank the whole jug. I probably only drank maybe half of it. But that, by that point in my life, wine wasn't doing it for me anymore. And I knew that if I drank wine when I went out, I knew I'd be in a blackout. I didn't know what a blackout was. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know a thing about alcoholism. My father had died of alcoholism when I was 13 years old. I saw him on his deathbed. He had an alcoholic death. And yet, I blamed my mother. If she would have taken better care of him, then he wouldn't have gotten sick with alcohol and died. So I came home with this half a jug, and my sister and brother-in-law were there, and my ex-husband was there. And what had happened was the daughters had told them everything. Everything that they had seen and heard and lived with for 6 years. It was the most humiliating moment of my life. They were young enough that they didn't hold anything back. They saw everything that a woman, an alcoholic woman of my type, they saw everything I did. I brought it all home. And so they were talking about it, and my sister and brother-in-law told me that if I didn't stop drinking, that they were going to take my children away. And I went into a rage and threw them out. At some point, my daughters went to bed. My ex-husband put them to bed. And then he came in the living room and sat and said a few things. And he mentioned that Al Dombrowski had been in the program in AA. And you know, I remembered that because I remembered when it happened a lot of years before that and never even sunk in. And so he said to me, "Bev, why don't you stay away from the wine for 1 week?" And he left. He left. So I sat there with that half-empty glass, humiliated, wanting to die, afraid to die, and not having any direction as to what to do. Now, I know that through the years, I said this prayer when I was sober enough at night I was taught that, and it was told to me if I said this prayer and I died during the middle of the night, that I wouldn't go to hell. And for the way I'd lived my life for the last 6 years, and all those commandments that I broke, I knew I was going to go to hell. Whatever God was in my life, He was nothing to me. I didn't hate him. I blamed him. You know, I think all alcoholics blame him. How can you let something like this happen? I'm a nice person. I don't mean to do these things. I must be mentally ill. And I didn't think there was any forgiveness for any of that. So as I'm sitting there, something told me that I could not stay away from the wine. I couldn't stay away from the wine for one day. I couldn't. You know, if Wednesday and Thursday came and I didn't have any money, I'd send my daughter to the neighbor next door and for a dollar and a quarter or a dollar 30 or whatever the wine was at that time in my life. And I'd hurry out and buy a quart of wine just to get me through the next couple of days. So I knew I couldn't stay away from the wine. It was it's something that came into my head. And so I picked up the phone and called Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I did not know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous other than good old Uncle Al had joined AA. So I called, and this girl called me back, Maybe 10 or 15 minutes later, I sipped on the wine a little bit while I was waiting for her to call, and we talked. She asked me a lot of questions, and I told her many lies. We don't know how to tell the truth in the beginning. I didn't know a truth from a lie when I came to this program. I heard somebody say one time, they always said they were at Wendy's when really they were at McDonald's, because they didn't know. You know, it just becomes so much a part of us, the lying, that I didn't even think about lying, about whether I lied or I didn't lie. It was all so deeply embedded in my soul. So she asked me how much I drank. I told her a glass of wine a day. Well, you know, I've said this many, many, many times. It was a glass of wine a day, except when it was never empty. Now, the only time that it was two or three glasses of wine a day is if somebody came to visit me and I had to hide my glass so you wouldn't know that I was drinking. It didn't matter how I looked or how I smelled, but, you know, as long as I didn't have that glass of wine in my hand, you weren't going to be able to tell I was drinking. So she didn't say anything. She asked me if I could stay away from the wine the next day. And I said, yes, I could. Well, I hadn't done that in 6 years, but I lied to her. I said, okay, you know, I won't drink tomorrow. She said, when you get home from work tomorrow, I will be there. So that's what happened. That was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1975 on March 24th. And from that day to this, I have never had another drink. Now, that doesn't make me any different than anybody else in this room. If you went out and came back 10 times, it doesn't matter. It's what it does, some of us have our slips before we come to AA. We try to quit and quit for a while and go back. And then some of us have our slips after we come to AA. The most beautiful thing is that we make it back. We make it back. And I always felt kind of sick at heart for the people that did come in and out, in and out, in and out, that they were criticized for that. But sometimes it takes longer than others. So at any rate, I went to work the next day, and of course my drinking, I didn't start to think about drinking until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's when I started drinking, and I knew I had that leftover wine. I didn't think about what I told Carol, whether I was going to drink or not drink. I knew I was going home and drink the rest of that wine. So 5 o'clock came, I left work, I came home, I came up the stairs to that apartment, and lo and behold, she was there, along with her, another AA, Kenny King. He's passed now, so I can use his name. I came in the house and she held on to me, grabbed onto me, and hugged me. And I knew that for the first time in my life, somebody understood my pain. And one alcoholic to another, and I've always said that. I don't care whether you have a doctor's degree in alcoholism. If you're not an alcoholic, you can't help me. Because you don't know the depth of my pain, and you don't know the horror of my life, because you never lived it. So at any rate, they came in. We sat down in the kitchen. I had the wine, and I said to her, what should I do with this wine? And you know, it was from that point on to today that I was honest. I was honest. It didn't mean I stopped lying right away, but at least I was honest. I was honest about that. What am I going to do with this wine? You know, all of a sudden now I'm afraid. I knew if they hadn't been there, I was going to drink it. But I said, what do I do with it? And Carol said, dump it. And so I wanted to please her right away. I wanted to please her. I dumped it. And they talked to the girls, and they told the girls that I was an alcoholic. I didn't tell the girls I was an alcoholic. I didn't tell them I was an alcoholic. They told the girls I was an alcoholic. They said that if I do certain things in my life, that I would have a life and they would have a mother that they never imagined. And I heard what they said. You know, I heard. And they said we'd be going to a meeting, and we did. And my first meeting was, it was in Albion, I think, or East Springfield, doesn't matter where. But it was an anniversary meeting, and my sponsor introduced me to the group. That doesn't happen around here anymore. I was brought to the meeting by an AA. I was introduced to the group by an AA. And so everybody in the room was comfortable. See, there used to be a time when you came to the, if you were a visitor, you had, the person that was going to bring you to the meeting had to announce it to the group the week before, because otherwise, if you came in and you weren't an alcoholic, anonymity was very, 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 very important. And they didn't want anybody in that group that might go out and tell other people that they were there. So she introduced me to the group. And the speaker that night was Doc Fagan from Cleveland, Ohio. And he'd gone out after 18 years and drank. And then he came back and he'd had like 6 or 7 years. But you see, that didn't scare me that night that he went out and drank. What scared me were the new people in the room that were reintroducing themselves. And I thought to myself, if they can't do it, how am I going to do it? So it was an anniversary. We had the speaker, then we had we ate, and I was taken home and dropped off and said that they would see me the next night. And the next night was Wednesday night. So probably for about the first 2 months of my sobriety, I was with them every day, either on the phone, either at their house, or either going to a meeting. So that was my beginning days of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, when did I realize I was powerless? Probably over the next few weeks, when you go to a meeting and you listen to what's being said. You know, every speaker has a way of presenting how they got to AA and how they didn't drink. And I was told that very night, ask for help in the morning and say thank you at night. And probably I was told to put my slippers under the bed, and then when you get up in the morning, you get on your knees. So that's exactly what I did. God was not a big deal. They weren't talking about God, the steps. I didn't even hear the steps that night. So I didn't understand anything. All I was told is don't drink today. Ask for help in the morning and thank him at night. And I thought, well, that seems awful easy to do. But I did it. And you know, when I asked for help in the morning, I looked at my ceiling. I looked up at my ceiling and I thought, please help me not to drink today. And that night when I went to bed, thank you for helping me not drink today. Now, I didn't mean that. But I said it because I was told to say it. And the days went by, and then I began to see something greater than myself was keeping me from the first drink. I couldn't believe it. It had been 6 years, and I could not be without a glass of wine. So that was the first thing that happened, that I recognized that I was powerless over alcohol. Well, then, as we started to get into discussions, Carol, and she did become my sponsor, and she's still my sponsor today, 42 years later. Now, we've had a few problems in between those 42 years and didn't speak to each other over personalities, but she's still my sponsor today. And they talked to me every day. And Kenny read to me from the 12 and 12. So he read the first step from beginning to end several times. And so therefore I began to understand, how was I powerless? Well, I would get up, like most of us do, and say, I'm not going to drink today. And by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I wanted a drink. And I felt good, and I felt like everything was going to be all right. I'd just have a drink or two. And then, of course, that night, the same thing would happen. The very, very same thing would happen. I'd get drunk. Once that first drink was in there and the compulsion to drink set in, there was no stopping me. There was no stopping me. And that's where I thought mental illness was. I would say to my daughters on Tuesday, because I'd feel so guilty about what a horrible life they had, Saturday we're going to go to lunch at McDonald's and we're going to go to the movies. And then Saturday morning would come, and I want to clean the house. You know, my apartment was, I had to clean it. And so I would get up, and I knew that if I had a glass of wine, that I would get the energy to clean. It wasn't that I had to have the wine at that point. I didn't look at it that way. I looked at it that it would give me the energy to clean. And so I'd have a glass. I'd start cleaning. We were going to go to McDonald's and we were going to go to a movie. So I had all this stuff I wanted to get done. Then, of course, the compulsion took over, and so I had to have a second drink. And then, by the time the second drink was done, I didn't care about the house anymore. Close the drapes, light the candles, throw everything under the bed or the couch, and it's called atmosphere. And that's what I did. That's what I did. That's why I found so many wine glasses everywhere in my apartment. And I couldn't understand where the fruit flies came from. Until Tom Kuhn, who was a teacher at Edinburgh, he'd done his master's or whatever, his MBA on the fruit fly. And so here then I realized that fruit flies like fruit and wine is made from fruit. So, at any rate, my mind wanders, so you have to forgive me if I stop for a minute to see, you know, to get back to where I need to be. I'm 77 years old, you know, that's old. That's old. Not old, but I mean it's old, a little old, you know. You start remembering things, you know, forgetting little things, but they always come back. Yeah. All right, so at any rate, so by noon, I had to take a nap. The girls, I gave them money, we'll go to McDonald's, I'll give you the money, you go in and get your food and bring it back, and we'll go home, because I'm going to have to take a nap. I'm exhausted, of course, from all the cleaning I did. So... But I mean, that's my rationalization. That's what I did. So we go to McDonald's. I drive drunk. I come home, I take a nap. So there was nothing that I said I was going to do, did I do? And that's what sponsorship in the beginning helped me to see, that my life was unmanageable. I never did anything I said I was going to do, because I couldn't. The wine came first, and once I started drinking, it was over. So that was the biggest thing for me. That's how I saw the unmanageability of my life, was that I say I would do something, and I couldn't do it because I had to drink. Now, I've been listening to Joe and Charlie, and because I wanted to get into some more stuff, like I read, when we get to the sixth and seventh step, I read Drop the Rock. I'd never dropped that before. I've made some amends after reading step six and seven. Things that were in my mind that never bothered me to drink, or never bothered me really, you know. It's that thing inside of us that they hurt me, and so I'm not going to forgive them. And they're petty little things, so they go away. You don't even think about them, especially if you don't see the person. But when I read the book Drop the Rock, I did some fourth and fifth step work. So at any rate, so I'm listening to Joe and Charlie tape, and they say something, and I'm just going to do it real quick because And whoever was talking, I can't tell who talks, whether it's Joe or Charlie, but they talk about the latest thing that has come out on alcoholism. And maybe you've already heard this. If you listen to the Joe and Charlie tapes, I don't know which ones I have. Kathy gave them to me. But is it an older version or a newer version? It doesn't matter. Well, at any rate, what they say, what one of them says is they now understand what alcoholism really is. It's an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. And there's, I want to say enzymes, but I'm not sure. I don't want to be technical, so I'm going to say it the way I can say it. That when normal people take alcohol into their bodies, they might be able to have one drink, possibly two, and they're done. They get that dizzy feeling. They get that nauseous feeling. They don't like drinking. So they do very little, and when they do, they sip it and they have a drink or two. And their body tells them, no more, no more, you know. So, but the alcoholic, when the alcoholic takes the first drink, whatever is normal for the person that drinks one or two drinks and then can't drink anymore, is the opposite. This enzyme, or what it is, when the alcohol gets a hold of it, when it gets a hold of the alcohol, then it wants more. It wants more. Give me more. Give me more. And you start feeling this, how we felt. You know, this, oh my God, this is so wonderful. I feel so good. I don't feel as awful as I usually feel. And we know as we drink on that this is what happens. We know we're going to get better when we start drinking. But this enzyme or whatever it is keeps wanting more, wanting more, wanting more. And so, and that's why we get drunk. And that's why when we're not drinking, we're thinking drinking. And it's like we begin drinking. And then over time, we start doing things that we're ashamed of when we drink. And so therefore, when we got to drink more to get rid of the shame and the guilt. And then in drinking more, we do worse things as the years go by. Horrible things, in my case, horrible things. And then we blame God, you know? We blame God. I don't know why you're doing this to me. I'm not this kind of person. But when the tapes told me this, I thought, and that's why we can put down the drink and 20 years later pick up the drink, but we don't pick it up and start all over again. If this enzyme or this thing that's in our body keeps growing and growing and growing and growing through the years. And so when we pick up the drink 20 years later, we're at the point where it's not too long where we were worse off than we were when we first started. So I understood that today. I really did. I was very grateful for that. So I guess that's all I can say to you about the powerlessness. I saw it. The total picture came to mind of the last 6 years of the things that I did that I never meant to do. And I wasn't mentally ill. I was an alcoholic. And well, that doesn't mean that I don't have some mental issues. But, but if I don't drink, I'm not an alcoholic. And they said, when we don't drink, we recover from alcoholism. And then again, he said, that's controversial too. It's in the big book. It says that, you know. We are recovered in mind and body when we don't drink the alcohol. So, I guess now... whatever we want to do first. Do you have a question, or you want to talk about your recognition of your powerlessness? Whatever you want to do, it doesn't matter.
Thanks, Beverly. Yeah, anybody that has any comments in the form of questions, or if you wanted to say anything about your experience with the first step?
Great.
part, Bruce.
How about your experience? Pete, how about you? Come on, Pete. How about you? How did you recognize that you were
positive? Hello, Beverly.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bruce. I'm sorry. Sorry, Pete.
Thank you.
Yes.
That was a great refresher for me, because when I came in here, I wasn't an alcoholic. I was just mad and not very happy. And nobody at work would do what they were supposed to, so I drank a lot. But listening to how you described that, I wish somebody would have told me that about normal drinkers when I was 20, 25, 35, because I would order two at a time just to get going, you know, because I knew that's, you know, that's how you got to where you wanted to go. I would never drink one or two drinks over a four-hour period. I would drink five at an hour period or more in over 4 hours, and then who knows, because the blackouts, yeah. But it just really hit me about, you know, my because it took me a while to admit I was an alcoholic, but some of the things that you shared really brought it to light to me again that I was an alcoholic a long time ago and just was bumbling through life, lying, and all that other good stuff that goes along with it. Now the question is, I don't have one.
Oh, that's good.
But that's an honest program.
I understand that.
I got a question for you, probably to, so to speak. Anyway, thank you very much for coming out and sharing your experience, strength, and hope.
It's just as good for me as it is for everybody else in this world. There's nothing special about me. I'm an alcoholic, and you help me as much as I help you. So, go ahead.
Good. Thank you very much. You're cutting down on the tape sales. So, anyway, my question for you is when you first got into the program, you realized that you were powerless over alcohol. When and how did you and your sponsor come to the agreement of, since you knew you were powerless over alcohol, did she work out through the unmanageability of the first step with you?
Yes. Yes, she did, because the unmanageability was saying that I was going to do something with my kids or clean a house or keep an appointment or you know, do something important in my life. As soon as I started drinking, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't do it anymore. So the unmanageability was never following through on anything I said I was going to do. Mm. I just couldn't do it. I that's where the guilt and the shame and the remorse came in.
That's great. And then how, when you take someone to ask you to be their sponsor, how do you take them through that powerlessness and unmanageability in their own life?
We talk about it right from the very beginning. Right from the very beginning. I don't waste time not going through steps. The steps are the program. You know, the steps are the program. And the sooner we get through them, the more we can start living them. And I believe that we live the 12 steps, that you can be powerless over anything and your life can be unmanageable. You know, say you have a child that's got an alcohol or a drug problem and you're running around trying to save them all the time. Your life is totally unmanageable. So, you know, I get them in it right away. Oh, don't be chicken, Pete. It's okay. Oh, all right. All right, so at any rate, so I bring them into the steps right away. It was important, it was that important to me, so I get them right on it.
I'd like to thank you, Bev. thank God for my sponsor. Keeps me busy, keeps me on my toes, keeps me active, because ever since I retired, I have too much time on my hands, and we all know what that. And lately, you know, I've been facing some depression problems, and I hate it. I just can't stand that feeling. And I talk with Kevin, I talk with whoever I can about it. I mean, that's about the best way I can explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the only way out.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, We're not doctors in this program, so we can't judge on medication or no medication, but there may come to some point in our lives where, you know, the brain chemistry isn't enough. You know, you change the course of your life. And so maybe you need to get some outside help. Go to a doctor and tell him what's going on with you. And maybe they can give you something to help you through the depression. There's nothing wrong with that, because it does not change the way you think. You know, pills that for anxiety and depression do not change the way you think. They don't hit the brain, it hits the nervous system. And that calms us down, and it helps us to have a, you know, not be so depressed. I mean, there are times when I do get down in the dumps, but I think that's called being human. But when you're depressed and you can't get out of it, then there's more that needs to be done.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Pete. Thank you. Yes, Joe wants it. Joe? Joe over there.
Hi, Bev.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, what I wanted to know is, how many times have you done the first step?
How many times have I done the first step? Many, many, many times. I just changed the powerlessness over alcohol, over powerlessness over a boss, powerlessness over the weather, powerlessness over my children, powerless over a husband.
Oh.
Anybody that knows Ron knows that's possible.
Yeah, okay.
I live it, Joe. I live it.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you.
I love you too, Joe.
Thanks, Beverly. Great job. You mentioned slipping and how people who slip over and over and over again start to get a little reputation in these rooms. And it made me think of someone right now who's in a rehab and has slipped a number of times. So when one of your women slips, how do you get them back into this thing to want to do this again or want to try it again?
Well, they slip, I just tell them or ask them, are you done? And if they're not done, then I say, call me when you're ready to get sober. There's nothing I can do in the meantime. I don't want to have a cup of coffee with you. I don't want to enable you. I'm not very nice. I mean, when they have slips, I don't judge them. I mean, there's a case that happened a while back where the person was drinking and doing their steps, and I did not know they were drinking, and they did their fourth and their fifth. That really angered me, because that's playing with the program, and that's life, and this is life and death. But mostly, if they're going to drink, they're going to drink. And I don't judge them, but don't, you know, as soon as you want to get sober, call me, we'll get right back into it. And never let them go. Never, ever, ever let them go. They might want to let me go. I've been fired a lot of times. Because it is life and death. To me, it is.
Anyone else?
How about somebody sharing how they realized that they were powerless? Go ahead, honey. There she is.
Here I am.
Yeah.
How do you look so good for 74?
77.
70. That's even more unbelievable. I want to be just like you.
Oh, you already are.
I am, aren't
yes.
I? Yeah. I just got to stay that way. And
yeah.
I just wanted to say I knew I was powerless because I couldn't quit. But I was not unmanageable. I never missed work because I drank at work. I never missed paying my bills. Even though I was smoking pot and that was getting so expensive, I probably would have started using my electric bill money to pay for it. But I hadn't. I mean, none of my bills were behind. I had a car paid for. I had a trailer that was paid for. My kids were healthy and anti-drug and anti-smoke kids, even though I was not. And so I told my sponsor, I says, you know, I know I'm powerless, but I'm not unmanageable. So she gave me a workbook to do. my sponsor's sponsor is your sponsor. So she gave me a workbook to do, and I did the workbook. And what I ended up seeing out of that, like you were saying, you never followed through. I mean, it wasn't so much I saw that. What I saw was my thinking, how I processed things and thought through things. And in my mind, it was almost like, holy, I am so unmanageable inside my head that you just give me a matter of time and I would have spent my electric bill money. You would, I, just because I didn't have a DUI, don't ask me why I drove drunk all the time. I just like, all I could see was it was right there. My unmanageability was going to be out there for everybody to see. And I just felt so grateful that it was so contained in my thinking. It was so unmanageable. However, as time went on in recovery, I saw, oh, yeah, that's right, I did do that, and I did do that, and they did see that. And, you know, I mean, it was more evident, the more sober I got, how unmanageable I really was. But that was a real hard concept for me to get. But I'm just ever so grateful, because to me that was almost like a high bottom. I mean, people lose their kids, and I mean, I got to give them credit. I got to give them credit, and then they're asked to be sober, go to jail, you know, lose your kids. I just like, oh, my heart just goes out to them, because I don't know if I could have done that, you know. But thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy.
Okay.
Thanks, Beverly.
All right.